you know, what was cool about the medic community, the EMS community, was like, you know, they're so excited that, you know, that you're making a film. They don't treat you like an actor or something like that. Like, they just throw you the oxygen tank and they're like, carry this up.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
Hey, glad to have you back. Another episode of Story and Craft. And if this is your first episode, my name is Mark Preston. So glad to have you along. And today we're going to be sitting down, having a great conversation with Ty Sheridan, who has been acting since back with Brad Pitt in The Tree of Life. He was also in Mud with Matthew McConaughey. He was in Ready Player One, that Steven Spielberg sci-fi film. Very cool. Just saw it a couple weeks ago, in fact. And most recently, he was in The Tender Bar, which was a film George Clooney directed. And he's been in a lot of great projects. He's got one coming out on March 29th called Asphalt City. He produced that movie also, and he's co-starring with Sean Penn. Going to be a great film. Very much looking forward to checking it out. And don't forget, everything you could possibly want to know about Story and Craft is at the site on the Webernets. Just go to storyandcraftpod.com. There you go. All the socials, everything you could possibly want to know. Send me a message, an email, even a voicemail. They can do that as well. Now, don't forget also, if you could do me a favor and go ahead and subscribe, like the show, and leave a review if you so desire. Give some stars, you know, whatever. Just make sure you subscribe. That way, every time we have a new episode, you get a notification letting you know something good is waiting for you. All right, so let's get after it. Today is Ty Sheridan Day right here on Story and Craft. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. I think you sounds like you got a busy day going on.
I do have a busy day going on, but it's, yeah, happy to be here.
Very good. Now, where about are you joining me from today?
I'm in LA, Manhattan Beach, California. How about you? Where are you?
I am a native Texan from Dallas.
All right. Me too.
I lived the last 25 years on and off in New Orleans and Southern California, mm-hmm. but I've just relocated to South Padre Island.
All right.
I figure if I can live and work anywhere, I'm going to be on the beach. I got a daughter who's in on her gap year right now between high school uh-huh. and college. And so she came cool. down here with me and just got done bartending for spring break. That was an odyssey.
Sure, that was. I'm sure.
So, yeah, you're from Texas also, right?
That's yeah, right.
Whereabouts?
I grew up in a really small town in East Texas in between Dallas and Houston called Elkhart, Texas.
Oh, okay. I got family yeah. in Longview. So mm-hmm.
My sister lives in Longview.
So you probably made a stop once, twice to Bodacious Barbecue. Or,
I don't know if I've been to Bodacious.
They have old Dr. Pepper, glass Dr. Pepper bottles. They have a big water bath of warm water, and they have barbecue sauce. So the barbecue sauce is always mm-hmm. in one of these bottles warm. I know I'm not a big barbecue guy necessarily, but everybody, it's like it's on I-20, so everybody goes there.
Yeah.
You know, so
right.
Very good. But no, you know, it's so funny. I rarely go over folks' IMDb. I don't really try to scour too much because I don't like to sit mm-hmm. down and talk with folks like going over your resume. But I didn't realize the depth of how much stuff you've done because you've been on the scene. I love all the work you've done that I've seen. But
appreciate that.
I was trying to find some of the projects that maybe I haven't heard of before, and just stumbled across. You know, my daughter is the biggest Zach Bryan fan on planet Earth. I mean, she is. Mm. That's her god when it comes to country music. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that the video for Nine Ball, mm-hmm. just kind of start off as curious, and for my daughter's sake, because I know she's going to ask, how did you get involved in that project with Matthew McConaughey?
Good question. Yeah, it was really like last minute and just seemed like a lot of fun. You know, I think Zach is really special artist, and it was, you know, go shoot pool, hang out, work with McConaughey and on a Zach Bryan music video for a day. Sure. Why not?
So y'all work together about once every decade, you and McConaughey got to connect, you know, another good Texas guy.
No, it was good. He's so much fun to work with, really. He's a character maybe that'd be an understatement.
Well, you know, I haven't watched too many videos since, you know, I'm a little older than you are. I remember when MTV actually played videos, but I really love that. It was just such a cool bit of storytelling. It was just kind of, it was just kind of neat.
Totally.
When we were doing our drive down here in the U-Haul, my daughter, at least super good chunk of the trip had all this random stuff from Zach Bryan. And that's about the only person that she's actually the voice of my show here. And but the thing is, she doesn't ever really listen to it. I think if I can get Zach Bryan to come on, she's like, okay, fine, I'll listen to that. It was very impressive. And I don't say that often. It's like, I have a chance to speak with a lot of wonderful folks, but the breadth of projects you've done and the amount of folks you've worked with who are just, you know, as a young actor, it seems like you probably had more unique learning experiences than, you know, a lot of your contemporaries, just the people you had a chance to work with and the projects you're working on. But,
appreciate that. I'm a lucky guy.
You've had a long career, but the thing is, making that transition, you're a young actor to now your mid late 20s in that realm. Mm-hmm. So, was that a hard shift for you to go in people's minds, you think, from being the teen actor to doing the kind of projects you're doing right now?
I don't know. You know, I think kids really, you have a teenager, younger, early 20s daughter, sounds like, they change fast. You know, it's like you don't see them for 6 months and they're 6 inches taller.
Yeah,
you know, it seems.
I got one just turned 21, which is mind boggling to me. Yeah, just kind of.
Oh yeah,
legally drink alcohol now. but the transition for you, it seemed very seamless. It's like it just, you know, you went from Ready Player One. I was watching that, and then I watched. What was I saying the other day? I've seen three of your films in the last week. You know, I was like, let me go check out some of his other stuff. I really enjoyed it, and to kind of go back. I mentioned Ready Player One. I've been curious since watching that. I do a lot of voiceover. It's kind of one of my main things I do, but I was curious. Mm-hmm. A lot of that movie seems like, was it motion capture? Was it voiceover?
It was both. It was motion capture. We shot in motion capture for about 8 weeks on the film. You know, it was a bigger project, obviously. So, you know, we had a lot of shooting days, but yeah, 8 weeks of the shoot, we were in motion capture. And so, yeah, I guess for anybody who's listening, doesn't know what motion capture is. It's, you've probably seen the behind the scenes on like Avatar or something like that, of the actors wearing the funny suits and with the tracking markers all over them, and, you know, the cameras on their face. So we were in a volume with 180 infrared sensors and, you know, recording the animation data, because I think like 40% of the movie takes place in a virtual world. And so I'd never done that before, and it was very technical. And, you know, I guess it's the closest experience I've ever had to like working on a stage, for instance.
Oh, so you didn't have that background of working on stage. You kind of went right to on camera, more or less, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. No, I kind of randomly fell into this whole thing, and especially the film world. I was 10 years old, and I was going to, you know, I grew up in a really small town in East Texas, and was going to a public school there, and some casting directors came through and were casting for this movie called The Tree of Life. And they ended up recruiting like 10,000 kids across the state of Texas to come and audition for this film. And they were sending invites home with the kids, and I just happened to take home one of these invites, and my parents said, well, you know, why don't you go and audition for this movie? You know, you can always tell people you got to audition for a film one time. And I said, yeah, that sounds cool. You know, why not? And so.
But was the bug already there? Like, were you intrigued, or was this like, yeah, I might as well try it out and just do it once?
Well, I definitely was a creative type. Yeah. But I was also an athlete as well. So.
Now, what were you doing in high school back then? Or what were you doing back in school when you were, like you said, you're an athlete, or were you,
I was playing baseball pretty much year round. But I played all the sports, you know, we had a baseball, basketball, football, ran track, in middle school, but yeah, I was just playing sports, hanging out with my friends. I've always been very into the outdoors. You know, my dad would take me a lot out on the Trinity River, and we would fish on the Trinity River. And so, I was just a boy and doing what boys do in the neck of the woods.
What kind of work did your dad do back then?
My dad works for UPS. So he's a UPS driver. He's been doing that for over 30 years. And my mom, she was always kind of a small business owner. She owned, she was a massage therapist for a while, and she, you know, would travel around working with kids that had, you know, some kind of muscular dystrophies or something like that, which was cool. But yeah, and then she, you know, had a salon and a clothing boutique and stuff like that. So yeah, my parents, nobody came from the, you know, entertainment world at all. You know, film was this far-fetched land that, you know, I didn't even know, no one could even fathom that it was something you could do for a job, right? And so I randomly went to this audition kind of on a whim and met Terry Malick there and ended up getting called back. And it was a year-long audition process.
Really?
And then finally got cast in this film. And then it was very unique experience. I'd never read a script. I never memorized any lines. And we were shooting this movie for about 4 months down in Austin. And it was like the greatest summer camp ever. As soon as I landed on the set, I was like, man, who are all these people, you know, and what do they do? And filmmaking, the whole process of making a film was just as new to me, you know, as acting was. And so I just kind of became enamored with it all. And so, yeah, that's really where it kind of started for me.
That's very cool. Now, if I remember right, it's been a little while since I've seen it, but you were the younger version of Sean Penn's character. Am I correct? Isn't the movie kind of told?
No, the movies. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, story is there are three sons in the family. I played the youngest son, and then Sean Penn would be the oldest son.
Okay. And Brad Pitt was your father, correct?
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. My kids make fun of my memory all the time. I'm trying to go back in time and see this movie.
No, it's pretty good.
But you're, you know, we'll get to it in a moment, but here you are back with Sean Penn again.
That's right.
So when you did this, what was your parents' impression? Like, what were you, or even let's go to like even kids in school, because this is not, you know, you're in small town East Texas. Here you're showing up in a movie. Did that kind of alter your social dynamic and what you're up to? How did that shake out when it came to your social life?
Not really, other than I just disappeared for a summer and my friends didn't see me. And then when I got back, they said, "What were you doing?" I said, "I was working on a film." And they said, "Bullshit. I don't believe you." And then the film took 2 years to come out. And then it finally did come out. And you know, because we were from a really small town, it wasn't playing in our local theater. And so people had to drive, you know, an hour or so to go watch the film. And as you can imagine, you've seen the movie, The Tree of Life. It's a beautiful film.
Oh yeah, I thought it was beautifully shot. I mean, it was a really, really, it was an interesting study, and kind of, I think anybody watched it had to kind of look at their own life and their own upbringing. You know, it was exactly. An interesting contemplation of a film, certainly.
100%, and it won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival the year it came out, and you know, it's a very highly regarded, you know, movie critically, and I think, you know, it was everybody, all my friends were waiting for me to see this, for them to see this film that I supposedly was working on.
Until they saw, they probably didn't believe you. They were like, yeah, you're full of it. You were at summer camp. Come on.
I didn't know anything about the movie. I honestly didn't know what it was about. And it was about these three boys, you know, growing up from this family. And so I was telling people, you know, what the movie was about without even knowing what it was about. And when they saw it, it was obviously like more different than anybody could have even fathomed. And so, yeah, it was, I don't want to say they were making fun of me. They were kind of poking fun that I was in this, you know, this weird movie. And then it was like, I would just disappear. And I went back to my public school and I disappeared a few years later and went and worked on this movie called Mud.
Oh, by the way, I got to say, I loved Mud. That was like when it came out, I didn't know it. Because, I mean, I love McConaughey. I mean, come on. You know, that was such a great random film. It was like, but not that. So that was your second film you're in.
It was the second film I worked on. Yeah. And that was, you know, like I said, I was, you know, grew up on the going fishing with my dad on the Trinity River. So it was about these two kids who find a fugitive hiding out on this island on the Mississippi River. And then they're going to try to help this guy. And so it was like when I found that project, it was kind of very close to home. And so, I don't know, it was a way, I think, just to express myself and my experience through a film. And, you know, it was a really special experience. And then I just kind of, after that, I just kind of completely fell in love with, you know, I realized the power of cinema. You know, we premiered that movie at Cannes, Mud. I can't remember what year that was, 2012 or something like that. And, and competition. And I remember going there and, you know, I was 15, 16 years old. And when the movie ended and, you know, thousands of people stood up and gave us a 20-minute standing ovation.
Really?
No, I was like ingrained, you know, it was like, I realized like the magic and the power of cinema in that moment. And I forever knew that was what I wanted to do in that moment.
Well, plus you had a chance to work with Sam Shepard, which is in its own way kind of such a special thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He was so cool.
What were your folks, because they're the ones who even said, hey, go to this audition thing, you know, check it out. It could be fun, you know?
Yeah.
When, obviously, and I like I say, you have a very, of all the people I've spoken with, you've kind of got one of the most unique careers because you took off, you went right into really great projects with very talented people, great directors. So you've had a chance to jump right into the meat of like really good stuff. So from being in small town Texas, kind of a two-part question. How did your parents kind of perceive it and start navigating it? And how were you able, like, when did you make the move and go to LA or, you know?
Well, I never really made the move to LA. I mean, I'm back and forth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I spend a little time in LA, but mostly, you know, my time is spent in Texas and has been spent in Texas. And for years, you know, I was working on films and bouncing around, so it didn't really matter where I lived anyway. There was a decision, you know, it was like, well, after The Tree of Life, which is the first film I worked on, I was 11 years old and I told my parents, you know, 11 or 12, I told them, I think this is something I want to do. You know, it's really fascinating. And I think they had, you know, a reluctance around, you know, obviously like hear crazy stories about child actors and is it really the best world for your kid to be getting caught up in? And so, you know, I think there was obviously, you know, some hesitation there on my parents' part, but, you know, of course, if they were there and, you know, were kind of looking after me and I think they were, and it was something I wanted to do. My parents have never, if I ever told my parents I wanted to do something, they were always supportive. I've been super lucky. They've never really, you know, they were right there. They're always, yes, what can I do to help you? And I think it was no different in this context, obviously like a bit more nuanced. You know, it was also like, I wasn't living like the child actor life, you know, I wasn't on some regularly occurring Disney show. I was, you know, living in East Texas, going to the public school that all my friends went to. And then I would just disappear for a few weeks at a time and go work on these small indie movies. And then it kind of, you know, when I was about 16, I had to kind of make a decision, you know, to whether or not I wanted to really just focus on school or I wanted to pursue the acting thing a bit more. I think that was a bit of a harder conversation with my parents. I basically told them, hey, you know, I'm working consistently now in these films. I was 16, 17 at the time.
Well, did they have an appreciation for the it's not that you're working on films, but you really were, you were, like I said, the caliber of what you were doing was so, it was up there. You know, you were getting a lot of traction. I mean, did they recognize, or did you have an agent or a manager or somebody say, listen, this kid's got it going on right now?
Definitely have my manager, Paul Nelson, I met on the set of The Tree of Life, and I met him through Jessica Chastain. So he represents Jessica and she and my mom had spoken and got kind of close while they were, well, he came to visit on that set. And then, you know, he's been kind of right there in our corner all along. And he was the one, I think, that, you know, gave my parents the comfort and, you know, the security that, you know, he was looking out for me, making sure I was working on quality projects and stuff like that. But I think my parents knew like, oh, it was good. You know, it's like, these are good projects, but they didn't really know, you know, they didn't realize, you know, exactly. I mean, they didn't know if one director was better than the other, for instance. They just don't have the experience. But yeah, but at the same time, you know, it was not a big shift. It was really just, you know, it'd go and, like I said, I would just leave and I would go work on these projects for a few weeks at a time, miss a little school and then come back. And so my life didn't really change that much until I was 16 or 17. And then I started working more consistently. And I knew that I had a little momentum. My parents, I think, knew that I had a little momentum, and I had to kind of confront them and tell them, hey, I want to pursue this, you know, more full time and really like turn this into a career and not just a hobby. And I think for them, you know, that meant leaving school and, you know, trying to finish school early because I couldn't focus on, you know, it's really hard to make films, period, when you have to do that on top of, you know, 3 hours of school every day and all of your homework. And when you're 17 years old, it got really challenging. And so I told my parents, I said, hey, I'd like to either just focus on school or continue pursuing the film thing, which I really want to do. And they, you know, they were supportive, but I think it was, you know, like a bummer because my mom didn't want me to get my GED, you know, she wanted me to graduate high school. And, you know, so I ended up getting my GED and then kind of focusing on the film thing. And then later tried to get into, I always wanted to go to university. So I tried to get into UT and they pretty much laughed me out of the admissions office. Because my
really?
GPA,
no, no, why?
Was,
yeah. Oh, your GPA.
My GPA
okay.
was terrible because I couldn't make up elective classes when I would go and I would work on a film. So I would come back to school and of course, like all my core classes, grades would be transferred, but the elective classes, you know, can't make up PE. So I had zeros factored into my GPA for two semesters for my three elective classes. And my GPA was just absolutely horrendous. And so, you know, the UT basically, yeah, laughed me out of the admissions office. And I thought about getting into other schools, but then, you know, I just decided I'd just focus on the film thing for now, maybe come back to this.
Yeah, maybe that's serendipitous. Maybe that was kind of like a little nudge to say, stick with it. You're doing great, you know.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, now it's funny, you know, I've spoken to, you know, a few of the professors there and a few of the classes, you know, at UT, which is cool. We've gone full circle.
Well, you know, McConaughey, you know, you ever want to go back, you know, I think he has got some pull there, you know, that's what's kind of a neat full circle thing. I was telling my daughter last night doing the Zach Bryan video with him for, you know, when you did Mud, that's one of your first, and now you're kind of back with him. And, he's, you know, my favorite thing is whenever I see a video pop up on YouTube of him going through Whataburger or something like that. So it's a uniquely Texan kind of, I have to ask you, you're a Texan and my daughter is loving being here now because she can get a Whataburger. Now, what's your favorite item on the menu there? I got to ask every Texan I talk to.
Have Whataburger?
Oh yeah.
I think it used to be the honey butter chicken biscuit, but I feel like it's gone downhill. The quality has gone downhill.
Yeah, well, you know, they did sell, I think, the majority interest or controlling interest in some company in Chicago or something. But it depends which one you go to these days, you know.
Yeah,
but
the
every actor I've spoken with, it's really weird. High percentage, under 30, a lot of them are from Texas. And you're the second one that said the honey butter chicken biscuit, which we had that for the first time just the other day. And I'm like, I don't know, my daughter's current jam is the grilled chicken sandwich, you know, because she was bartending at for spring break. If you've ever been down to South Padre, it's a real big, amazingly large deck, you know, and she's been bartending. So for an 18-year-old is like, you know, kind of wild, but when she gets out of work, the only thing open is Whataburger. So, you know, for her, it's not a big deal every night. I'm like, baby, I gotta cook something because it's like at my age, I can't do Whataburger every day. It's tasty. Don't get me wrong. But now
for sure.
One of the things I'm curious about when kind of going to Ready Player One, I got to ask anybody, because the first director I ever recognized as a kid, as a director, as being part of the, besides people on the screen, an important person is Spielberg. And working with him, you're the first person I've had a chance to speak with who worked on one of his projects. What were some of the takeaways of having worked on a Steven Spielberg film, a young guy? Anything comparatively the other kind of things you've done or just general experience? I was curious what it was about or what it was like for you.
Well, I mean, he's touched pretty much any kid in the world. You know, most kids in the world have seen his films. You know, I think I for sure wouldn't be the same kid without his films. And I think for anybody working in this industry, you know, he's an amazing, amazing guy to work with and, you know, a true living legend. So yeah, it was, you know, dream project, obviously.
So you had been aware of him. You know, obviously you were young when you got in, you know. Well, no, you've been around for a little while, of course, by the time you played Ready Player One. I just remember seeing E.T. and I saw a few films as a kid going, wait a minute, this is a name. You whenever you hear his name, the movies are going to be good. As a kid, you know, I don't really know what a director, you know, for the most part does. You know, of course, you started off with Terrence Malick, you know, you've been blessed with some great directors. And I still have yet to see The Tender Bar. That's still on the list. I wanted to see it this weekend. I just ran out of time. But George Clooney was, I always wondered, does he have a chill directing style? Is he an easygoing guy, or is he got a certain intensity on his set? Because we all know him like Danny Ocean, chill kind of George Clooney, but as a director, what's he like to work with?
He's a pretty chill guy. He knows what he wants. He, you know, shoots efficiently. He's kind of like an amazing actor's director because it's almost like he's acting the scene out with you. You know, he's talking to you like no other director. He's the only actor director I've ever worked with, but he talk to me like no other director talked to me, you know, and sometimes in like very simple terms, like, you know, that line, look down before you see it and then look back up. Trust me, it's an old movie star trick, you know, it's stuff like that. And it's, you know, that was fun, you know? Yes, it was like, I felt like we were in the, you know, we're kind of in the same boat the entire time, kind of going through it together in a way, which was cool. But yeah, no, he's also very, very mellow, easygoing. He and Grant Heslov, his producing partner, have a great thing going. They're really, really, really fun guys to make movies with. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Now, you've been involved in producing stuff also, correct? Have you? Mm-hmm. So you're starting to get involved in kind of the, you know, the meat and potatoes, get some movies made. Is that kind of where you're going, you think? You know, you want to get more involved in producing, maybe direct something?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, you know, when I first walked onto a film set, the acting was just as new to me as everything else. And so, you know, the entire filmmaking process has always been fascinating to me. You know, from day one, I wanted to know what everyone's role was, what they were doing, why it took so many people to make films, why it was so slow. And, you know, having worked on small films and big films, I'm a curious guy naturally, and just was really curious about how do these big movies work, and how much money do you need to have this, you know, this amount of visual effects in your films, and why do you need so many artists? So I think like all of these questions have really kind of influenced, you know, the work that I'm doing, you know, beyond acting. I'm producing a number of films, including this film that comes out at the end of the month, Asphalt City, with Sean Penn. That's about paramedics in New York. And then, you know, I also started a company with a friend of mine several years back. It's called Wonder Dynamics. And essentially what we're doing is we're building AI-driven production tools that are really meant to, like, you know, make Hollywood level effects more attainable for the indie filmmaker, right? So allowing indie filmmakers.
Well, that's fascinating that you jumped on top of that, because I'm not, like, I just read Tyler Perry put on hold some studio development in Atlanta because he doesn't know how some of this tech's going to overtake the need to have large studios.
And it's moving so quickly, you know, I think, and you have to be very, you know, it's a very sensitive topic in, I think, all industries, but especially in Hollywood. You know, I think artists feel threatened by AI. And I think for us, you know, we are, my co-founder and I mean, his name is Nicola. We're both artists ourselves. You know, he was a visual effects artist and then Turner's supervisor. And I obviously come from have a background in acting. And so for us, it was really important, you know, that we use AI and machine learning to support artists, not to replace them. And in July last year, we launched a product called Wonder Studio, which is a web-based cloud platform that essentially you can upload any 2D video and extract the animation data. But not only the animation data, you can extract the lighting and your camera information and essentially build your visual effects shot and automate, you know, the process up to 80%. So that, you know, it's more attainable for the indie filmmaker, so to speak. And then you can take that into 3D softwares and continue working in the process. So it's not really like a black box or replacing artists in any way. It's really meant to support artists, if anything. But yeah, and then, you know, so it's all, you know, it's a very pivotal time in our industry. And I think that we really need to be having conversations around what the future looks like, you know, and looking out on the horizon and trying to understand, you know, where it's all going and how, you know, we can think about our careers in the most ethical sense in terms of, you know, not to stifle innovation, but really, you know, use it to support artists, right? And tell better stories. And so, yeah, I think anything to that nature is interesting and fascinating.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, the fact that you can actually, you know, I do, like I said, a lot of voiceover, and then within that aspect of the industry, there's a lot of worry because it can replace voice, but I always, like I tell, I teach students to teach voiceover as well. And I said, listen, ever since I got into this over 30 years ago, it's always been authentic, natural, real person. People crave authenticity, I believe. And that's the reason why I don't think AI will ever replace in the sense that I think people are worried about. But there are still questions out there, you know. And I, like you're saying, it can supplement really well and give maybe people that the only barrier between where they're at and where they want to go being finances. It sounds like what you're saying is this can kind of help them overcome that and maybe take some filmmakers who you may not hear about and give them, is that kind of what you're looking at this as a way to kind of give people tools they wouldn't have otherwise?
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely our mission at the company, is really try to democratize, you know, big stories for anybody anywhere, you know, so it's not so localized. You don't have to be, you know, in Hollywood to make these kinds of movies. You can be anywhere in the world. And I think that's, yeah, it's really exciting.
And you're in a creative industry, of course, but and you're very busy also. But when you're not doing this, what are you doing? I mean, what are the things that are kind of keeping you captivated, you know, so you're not burning out on the acting thing? What do you do? What kind of things are out there to keep some variety in your life?
The acting thing is a very sweet gig. You know, if you just want to be an actor, it can be great. And I think for certain actors that reach a certain level, like, you know, I have friends that, you know, they're actors and they're, you know, they have a very amazing body of work and they've reached a certain level in their career. And that's all they want to do. That's what they love doing. And they're just looking for the next best script, you know, and they don't really care about anything else, you know, that's the thing they love doing. I think for me, you know, I'm kind of the mind that in the school of thought that, you know, really the best opportunities come when you create them for yourselves, you know? So I'm constantly asking myself, how can I, you know, be procreative? And I think I'm kind of a workaholic. I like to be busy, you know, so the acting thing, just acting specifically, takes up very little of my time. It's really only when I'm working on films or in preparation to go work on films. And then the rest of the time, you know, is really kind of dedicated to my startup, Wonder Dynamics, and then, you know, producing other projects as well and development. So I actually spend more time, you know, these days doing the startup thing and developing projects than I do acting.
Well, it's funny what you said about the thing about acting, having it be, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that, but you know, if you're a director, you've married yourself to a project for well over a year, you know, but acting, I was speaking to the Anya Savchik. She was on the show with Ron Livingston, Loudermilk. Well, because she had said he had made this comment to her, like, she's like, something about directing and doing that. He's like, no, I like the acting thing. Show up, do my thing, get to leave. You know, that's,
yeah,
it, in a way, like, it's, you know, it's relatively stress free. And you look at the people having to, like, look at budgets and all that other kind of stuff. You'd show up and have some fun. But the things that you're doing intrigue you and stuff. But, like, would you have any, like, outside interests, things you'd like to do? Are you big into traveling? Do you hobbies, music, anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I used to have a lot more time for hobbies. You know, these days I'm pretty much working a lot, but yeah, no, I'm a big outdoors guy. I love the outdoors. I'm a big adventurer. Any any kind of adventure I can find myself on, it's great. I like to travel alone. I like to hunt and fish a lot. I like to fly fish and bow hunt. So those are kind of my outdoor hobbies. Yeah. Snowboard.
When you travel with someone else, you got to make sure your itinerary kind of something they want to do also, you know, but you're on your own. You're more of an explorer. You're out there on your own, just checking stuff out. But
yeah, maybe it sounds selfish, but you know, you get to do what you want to do and no one else can chime in.
Well, you're kind of in your own headspace exploring, you know, and I think as an artist, exactly. that informs you a little bit.
That's exactly right.
You're making me want to go look at a map. I didn't realize, I thought the Trinity River just ran south. I didn't know it traveled into East Texas. Now I got to go look at that. Now
Southeast from Dallas. So the headwaters start northwest of Dallas and then it dumps out into the Gulf Coast.
Are you any relation at all to, I have to ask, Taylor Sheridan, because I know he's in that neck of the woods. Any relation at all?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so. His folks, I think, are from Waco, but maybe somewhere down the line.
Well, it's interesting because when they shot, was it 1883? They actually shot it where, you know, it, like they were going across the Red River and all that kind of jazz. I was like, they really kept it true to, you know, where they were shooting it. But I want to touch on the project you're working on. Is this your first Asphalt City? Is this the first project you've produced?
This is the second or third project that I've produced. And then I have a lot of projects that are in the pipeline that I'm producing that are really in development. Asphalt City has been, you know, a labor of love for a really long time. And I first got involved with the project back in 2018. And it's helmed by this director, Jean-Stéphane Salvaire. He's a French filmmaker, and he's made these incredible movies like Johnny Mad Dog, which was about child soldiers in a nondescript country in Africa. And then he made this movie called A Prayer Before Dawn, which is incredible, about this English boxer who gets trapped in a prison in Thailand and joins an inner prison boxing ring. And so he's kind of made these very visceral, hyper real movies of, you know, these unique worlds, and he's a true auteur. I first got involved with the project in the early stages back in 2018. Sometimes, you know, it takes a long time to get these projects made. But yeah, we premiered the movie in Cannes at competition last year, and the movie's about paramedics in New York City. So obviously, you know, really, really important subject, and kind of, I think, really shines a light on medics and, you know, the role that they play in our society, how important they are, and like some of the trauma that they face on a daily level. You know, I don't think people really understand it. You know, I don't think people totally understand what they go through. It's a very close look at, you know, these medics. And it's really about, you know, a young rookie medic who I play, comes in and he's new on the job and he's working in East New York, and he gets partnered with this veteran medic who's Sean Penn. And so it's really about their relationship and kind of going through the trenches together.
Yeah, they live a very unique life. And it's funny what you said, and I think you're alluding to the kind of the stress they potentially take at home, how it colors your life. I had a good friend who I went to school with who was a flight medic for CareFlight. And, you know, in Dallas area, you know, you have a really bad accident, they send a helicopter.
A lot of car
you.
Accidents, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He, you know, I went to one of their get-togethers, a little party, and they had, some firemen, flight medics, and you could kind of tell that there was lots of steam that was getting blown off, you know, because of the thing, because especially these flight medics, they see stuff. I mean, they're basically giving, you did this film, you know, there's certain latitude that the paramedics have, but the flight medics, it's whatever they need to do to keep you alive. You know, they don't need to get approval for as much stuff, I think, as the paramedics do for certain procedures. But he would tell me stories. I'm like, wow, how do you come home and come down from that every day, especially like this film takes place in New York. There's a whole lot more going on there. Did you shoot it in New York?
Oh yeah. We were very much in New York.
What did you learn after playing a medic that you didn't know about being a medic, or the process that was very intriguing for you?
Well, because of the nature of Jean Stéphane's films, the camera sees everything. You know, it has to look real. It has to be real. And so I spent years doing ride-alongs with medics in New York.
Really? New York. No kidding.
Oh yeah. So I would travel in New York and we worked with a lot of medics at Wyckoff Hospital in Brooklyn. They were amazing. They were kind of our advisors through this process and would take us on ride-alongs. And so, you know, they don't really, you know, what was cool about the medic community, the MS community, it was like, you know, they're so excited, you know, that you're making a film, you know, that it kind of conveys the life that they live on a, you know, everyday basis. But they don't treat you like an actor or something like that. Like, they just throw you the oxygen tank and they're like, carry this up, you know, and then what's amazing about medics is like, you never know what call you're going to walk into. Like the call comes in and it could be a shooting, it could be a car accident, it could be somebody having chest pains, it could be someone who's drunk on the sidewalk and asleep. You never know. And so you find yourself immersed in these people's homes and in their worst moments a lot of times. You know, so you're very close with someone, and a lot of times like your responsibility is to keep them alive. I mean,
yeah, did you ever watch that TV show as a kid, Emergency? It came out in the 70s. Mm-mm. Oh, mm-hmm. it was Randolph Mantooth and an offshoot of, I think, Adam 12. I mean, we're going way, way back. But the interesting thing is that, the whole medic thing was not even really a thing. It really is a much newer idea, you know, from the late 60s, early 70s on, you know. You know, one of the things that I think is fascinating about it is, you know, you, like you said, you never know what you're going to walk into. Like, I know people do ride-alongs for roles when they're, you know, going to be a policeman. Certain things that are common with medics, you know, how they like to navigate their day, and then when they take a break, or, you know, what do they like to do? Or, you know, just what did you pick up on from the medics, that's pretty universal between everybody who does that gig?
Yeah, there are a lot of things. There are a lot of things. It's a very unique community, the MS community. To distill it into one thing, I'm not really sure what that would be, but yeah, a lot of times they're kind of like adrenaline junkies. You know, which, I mean, it's a highly intense job, they're incredible people. And, I think they deserve a lot more respect than they get. And I think that was a hard thing for me to watch. And like, I think what also created a lot of drive, you know, for me to make sure to continue pushing this film up the hill and make sure that it got made it's just super important. You know, that people,
you're right. We don't really see too many movies about medics, paramedics, and, you know, people who are out, you know, but you hit 911, you expect them to show up and know what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
Before we get going, I got a quick few questions. I call my 7 questions. I always like to ask everybody just a little extra get to know you, something kind of little extra something fun. Mm-hmm. First question I always ask, I'm a food nerd, always like to know, what is your favorite comfort food?
Anything that mom makes.
Oh, that's a good answer. Good. Well, name one thing that's kind of like in the Sheridan household that is just like, you know, if you come home and she's got that,
the quintessential meal.
Oh, yeah. Something you show up and it's on the table, you know you're home.
It's steak and potatoes, you know, was like three or four nights a week.
Really? Okay.
Oh yeah. That was a lot of steak and potatoes. So there's that. My mom makes, Salisbury steak.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait.
Really great. Okay.
Now, where's your mom live again?
East Texas.
No, I was joking. I want an exact address.
Oh, you want the dinner time.
Well, you know, growing up in Texas, you remember, you know, if you went to a proper public school, one day out of the week, you're having chicken fried steak. You know, those school lunchroom meals, you know, whenever they had Salisbury steak, I'm telling you, I think I'm one of the last generations. We had the lunch ladies making the real deal stuff. The Salisbury steak was always the jam for me.
Lucky. Yeah.
Now, if you were to sit down with three people, you're gonna have a cup of coffee and you're gonna talk story for a few hours, living or not. Who would those three people be for a perfect, you know, sit down?
Oh man, I think one of them might be Haruki Murakami.
Who's that again?
Maybe Haruki Murakami, the Japanese novelist. Wow, this is a really great question. Maybe Mark Twain.
Oh, that would be good. That would be good. You know, I like that. You're the first person that's brought up Mark Twain before. Hmm. Somebody threw that back at me the other day, and they were like, well, who would you choose? And I was like, well, shit, I must ask a hard question. I'm having a hard time figuring that one out, you know? But I got my three, but, you know, it's so funny because they're all not living, you know? So anybody else that you would, you know, you're like, I'd love to sit down and just pick their brain about something.
Oh, man, it's so hard. I mean, there's so many. Maybe Faulkner or Thomas Wolfe I don't know. That's a great question. My mind goes to like 20 people immediately.
So you're a big reader, I'm taking it.
I think at times, you know, at times.
You know, who's come up in the last, I've had a couple of episodes here. Cormac McCarthy's come up a few times. Yeah. So I'm like, I've never read anything of his. So that's actually on my list now to go read some of his stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of incredible ones. I recently read a Cormac McCarthy over the past few months and was really moved by Cities of the Plain. It's funny, like the epilogue in Cities of the Plain. I know it sounds weird just to like highlight the epilogue, but man, blew me away.
I mean, anybody that's a good storyteller, I don't care what kind of story they're telling, I can get into it. So I've had two people mention it, and I'm like, I got to go check out his stuff now. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're, I mean, maybe Shakespeare would be on that list. Maybe even Aristotle.
You know, what they call the salons in the old Greek times, sit around, people just contemplate, talk about life. I'm like, I like that idea. That's what I would be down with that.
Oh yeah, love the Greeks for that reason.
Now, next question, if you're to look back, who was your first celebrity crush when you were a young kid?
Oh, celebrity crush. I don't know. It's going back to my teenage brain.
Which, that can be a fun odyssey occasionally, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I always had a huge crush on Natalie Portman.
I'd just say as far as her performance, the fact that, kind of like you, she came right out of the gate. The professional, you know, the first big role she had was just a killer film. It's so funny seeing Natalie Portman. There's a generation that only knows her as the from Star Wars. Now, if you're going to be forced to live on an island, and it's somewhere you want to be, it's like a resort kind of situation, no streaming, no internet. So you're going to be there for a full year. What movie on DVD are you going to bring, and what CD are you going to bring with you to this island, you know, because that's going to be the only source of entertainment, something you watch and listen to over and over again.
Mm. What movie? Maybe Apocalypse Now.
Oh, I see the poster behind you right there. Are you a Hitchcock fan?
Yes. Big Hitchcock fan. Maybe Vertigo. Maybe Apocalypse Now. Maybe.
Who doesn't like Cary Grant, though? You know, that's like, you know, that's a movie I need to go back and see again. There's some movies I'm like, I need to get. There's some movies I watch once a year, and there's some movies that I'm like, I only saw once a long time ago. I need to see again. And Vertigo is definitely one of them. But what album? What kind of music? But what kind of album are you going to bring with you to this island?
I'm into all kinds of stuff. Yeah. But if I could pick one album, maybe a Zeppelin album.
Very good. Very good. Well, next question. If you were to define a perfect day, beginning to end, from time you get up, time you go to sleep, what are the component parts of a perfect day for you?
Well, not sleeping through your alarm to start is really good.
So you're a snooze button hitter kind of a guy?
Not really. Sometimes I can snooze, but I've had it before when you're super busy and or the alarm doesn't, the ringer doesn't go off or you don't hear it or something like that. That's never good. Waking up late is never good. I think getting good rest, getting sunshine in the morning, moving your body, and then a perfect day, like in the work world or the leisure world.
just in life, I've had a number of people mention, they go through the ritual of making coffee in the morning and then they're, exercise or yoga, certain things you like to be a part of your day every day.
Yeah. I mean, I love the outdoors. So for me, it's like perfect day is, being outside all day. And, I think anything that where you can find stillness, whether that's through your workout or your a sport or, hunting or fishing or anything, camping, hiking, anything like that, I think is for me perfect. I love the escaping my own thoughts and really just finding the stillness. So that would be the perfect day for me.
Last couple of questions is, if you weren't doing this, if you weren't finding the success and joy in doing this, what would you be doing for a living?
Yeah, I think about that often. and I don't know if I have like an answer. I don't know. I still like, I've always been a creative type. Maybe I would have found some form of storytelling if it wasn't film. I'd like to think that, but then again, maybe it's, maybe I'd be some kind of adventurer or a hunting guide or something like that.
It's definitely going to be outside something or other. And the last question is, 16-year-old you, you're going to jump into DeLorean and go talk to 16-year-old Ty. What's that piece of advice or knowledge or guidance, either to put you on a little bit different path, maybe make that moment of your life better? What's that piece of advice to 16-year-old you?
You don't have to, it's not a race. You don't have to stack it all up on your plate at one time. You can afford to enjoy and not give yourself too many responsibilities at one time. I think that would be the advice probably.
Well, very good. Well, my friend, I appreciate you spending some time with me today. I really do. And I love your work. I will say that. I just watched the Voyagers the other day again.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I think Voyagers is one of the, it's such a great story. I just watched it the other day and I just wanted to throw that back out that you're just one of the most interesting actors even when you don't have dialogue to just watch. I just enjoy watching you.
I appreciate that. That means a lot. Thank you.
Well, my friend, have yourself an absolutely wonderful rest of your day. Best of luck.
You too.
And looking forward, hopefully you have a chance to catch up down the line and we'll think about you next time I get a honey butter brisket from Whataburger.
That sounds great. All right, Mark, have a good one. Yeah, great talking to you. Thank you.
All right, there you go, Ty Sheridan. Great conversation. Always nice to connect with a fellow Texan and talk Whataburger. Inevitably, anytime a Texan's on, that always seems to come up, doesn't it? Really enjoyed the conversation. Again, the new movie he's got coming out March 29th is called Asphalt City. He produced it as well, co-starring with Sean Penn, all about being a New York paramedic and being in training and having Sean Penn train you. You know this is going to be a good film. You got to check it out. All right, so I'm going to get on out of here. The kids are back in town from school because it's Easter break, and we're going to hang out on the beach, do some stuff. Not quite sure. We're going to be stirring up some mischief. That's the game plan. So I'm going to go do that. You go have yourself a great rest of your day, a great weekend, whatever you got going on. Thanks so much for making Story and Craft part of it. Going to be back with another episode soon. So come back by and we'll connect again. All right. Thanks so much. And we'll talk to you soon right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Okay.